Welcome to the latest episode of the Finding Hope podcast from Rogue Retreat. You can find us in numerous ways. First of all, you can go to facebook.com/Rogue Retreat, and we're hosted by anchor.fm, but you can also find us through TuneIn and Apple Podcasts. Without any further ado, on with the latest episode.
You know, this is just such a blessing.
It is. Yeah.
It really is. You know, I think the first thing that pops in my mind is our little trip to Salem.
Mm-hmm.
I think we stayed in a Super 8 hotel.
Or, I don't know,
Motel 6.
Motel 6.
Uh-huh.
Or down on the wrong side of the tracks at a motel. But
that was an enlightening situation.
That was humbling.
Yeah. To see people on the street, off the street, and how they were getting things done.
We had to be in front of that commission.
Mission.
Was, you know, in, I don't know, the housing commission in Salem.
Yeah.
That was intimidating to walk in there and stand in front of those people and tell them they had to give us money.
Yeah.
Who were we to ask for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, us puny little people trying to get.
They shouldn't have given us anything.
We just get started here. I know we've been around a while, and I think our guardian angel, Betty. Just tell me. I know I've heard some of it about your road to your journey here to Seattle. This is, I'm not Seattle, but to Medford, Oregon. I know you come out of San Francisco somewhere in there.
Okay, all right. Well, I was born and raised in San Fernando Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And moved up here in 59 to Medford, you know, because I was lucky enough to have some traveling jobs. And so when I drove through, come over the pass on, I was 99 then,
mm-hmm.
I pulled over a little spot and slept the night because I was too tired to go farther. And I woke up and I saw the Rogue Valley, and that's where I decided I wanted to live. This is for me. And so I come up here, just like everyone else. I went through some marriages that were abusive, and I developed PTSD and things like that from, you know, and I suffer from some very severe depression at times. Keep me on track here.
Yeah, how you got here?
My mind's getting 30 seconds long anyway.
That's okay. But you settled in.
Yeah, I settled in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My husband and I, you know, manage this large 2,400 acre horse ranch over in Davis Creek.
Wow.
And and we were on several thrill shows, horseback and car and stuff like that. McGraw's Tournament of Thrills is what it was called. And so so we traveled all over and lived in the back of a pickup. Wow. We'd build a wooden frame and cover it with canvas, so that was our camper, you know. And I have to wash the laundry after a show or something and hang it up along the little 2x4s to dry. And invariably they didn't get dried enough, quick enough, before I had to roll them up and put them away. And my husband was always on me for damp socks. Oh, well, so the abuse goes more than one way. That marriage didn't work out, but I had two wonderful children from them. They have grown up to be just a super cool blessing in my life. They're just generous and giving, that take their shirt off their own back to help somebody out.
Okay.
That's what I see in Rogue Retreat, you know, that's what we've accomplished, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, it's not a hand out, you know, but a hand up.
Your family's always been that way.
Yeah.
You know, like you're talking about your children, but that didn't fall too far from the tree. Mm-hmm. You know, you've always been one that gives. So they've learned that. They're the same kind of way. They give.
Yeah. Well,
you know, your story that always resonates with me, and Harold, I'm not trying to take over for
you. No, go right ahead.
But I always think of her story of being homeless down in the San Francisco area. And then dreaming about this place up here. I mean, how did that happen?
Well, okay. That's where I'd gotten into my second marriage. And my husband, he got drunk one night and fell off his mama's porch in Tahlequah, Arkansas, and landed on his neck and became quadriplegic. We had him in the vet's hospital up there for recovery, you know, and in about a year I was able to get him back here, and we were driving this little blue van. But he became quite abusive. Physically, he regained some strength in his hands,
mm-hmm.
but going down the freeway, it just beat me up, things like that, you know. So that's where the PTSD came in.
Yeah.
But so we ended up in veterinarian hospital down in the Bay Area around Palo Alto and stuff, and so I didn't want to leave my husband, so I just slept in the car there. And then at the hospital, they were able to come up with some temporary housing to put me up for a little bit, like they did other. But, you know, there's a limit to that.
And so, right.
Well, I spent the rest of the time sleeping in the car, in the parking lot. Feet stuck out the window. But nobody seemed to mind.
Yeah.
A short car, huh?
Yeah. And I got acquainted with some people that were helping the homeless. I didn't consider myself a tragic case by any means, but they were just really loving and sharing and helping with love and support and job finding and things like that, you know. And they bought me my set of tools so that I could work as a carpenter at this big company in Palo Alto. And so that eventually led to manage a hotel for the homeless. It was just, and before I had left Oregon, I had seen this old, dilapidated boarding house in North Riverside, 525 North Riverside.
Okay, that old dilapidated.
That old dilapidated place, and it was dilapidated. I mean, there was two restrooms for 11 units, you know.
Wow.
And so I always wanted to buy that someday. In order to be able to help other people, like I've been helped. And so the time came, I was able to come back up here after divorcing the abusive one and, you know, and hiding from him and family. And so I came back up here, and I was able to make arrangement to buy it on a private contract, and because I had able to save some money while I was down in the Bay Area, you know, from all the work I did there. And then, and so I was able to buy that and move in, and I just started, there was already a lot of people renting the rooms. I think I was getting somewhere around $150 a month for them then. But I kept on improving them. It's like every time somebody would move out, I just go in and rebuild and repaint and you know, and just improve one apartment at a time. And I was, it was looking pretty decent when when you guys found me. But I remember that day I was working on another house on Ivy Street. My son and I was working on that. We loved to work together and we loved to build together. we have the same passions that way. So you folks walked in and said that, I don't exactly remember what you said, but said something about somebody had told you about I might be willing to sell maybe my Grape Street triplex or something, or whatever. And I mentioned about what I had down there on Riverside. And so we worked out a deal, and and you took over Riverside. But one day I got this call. Oh, Chad. Love that Chad. He was working hard, but oh, I don't know if we're gonna make it. So this gave me the opportunity to get involved again, and I loved it. I think of all my life, all the experiences, everything I've had in life was an understatement compared to the time I spent with Rogue Retreat, the people in the units, and working with you folks on the board and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the height of my life, you know. And
ours too.
Right, of my life. I just want to kick in right there is that I remember we had come up against a wall.
Oh.
And it was raining like mad. And we didn't know what we was going to do. It was down to the two or three of us in there when Betty walked in, and the guy was wanting the money now or tomorrow. And he wanted it last week for us being behind. And I remember you coming in and taking a look. And not only were you willing to put your time in and improving and working, you put your money where your heart was, right up front. Yeah, because we never could have made it without your money and your love for us. We were dead in the water.
I think she took pity on us, Harold.
I think she did.
No, I took pity on the people. No, on the people, you know.
Yeah.
I saw what you were doing, just exactly what I always wanted to do. And I didn't want to see that lost.
Yeah.
And
none of us did.
And no. And I put a lot of cash into rebuilding that. I put $20,000-$25,000working on those apartments every day and hiring people to help and things like that. I didn't get to keep a tally sheet because it wasn't important. You know, it was just something I wanted to do to improve the lives and the opportunities.
And what an opportunity. I was just sitting here thinking I passed out some things there. And it talks about six tiers in your dream. We used to be 525 North Riverside.
Uh-huh.
Now today, we all the way down. Now we got a housing retreat, a restart retreat. We got haven houses. And what we got, five of those. Summit House, Cindy's House, Heather's House, Amy's Haven, Harold's Haven.
Named who? After who?
Harold's Haven. And then we got Hope Village, Foundry Village, Hart Village, Kelly's Shelter, and Campground. All exciting. From one place, 525 North Riverside. Mm-hmm. And I'm just taking a gander here 3 months ago for 2019 and 20. That's, yeah, 2019, the last part of 2018 to 2020. And I've had 34 guys come in and out of these programs. And I started to look, out of 34, we lost seven went back to the old bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
But we got about 27 still doing good. Then we look around and see who we got in this program, and they come out of this 525. No.
You planted the seed.
You planted the seed, and we've been recipients of your dream to see other people.
You guys had the same dream. We just we landed on the same planet together.
Yeah. Yes.
We just
And I'm hoping that somewhere at the end of this video we can show a picture of our plaque down there at 525.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was looking for Betty's Village.
Yeah,
Betty's Retreat.
Betty's Retreat.
I mean, it's and those early days, Betty, you know, when we were trying to just keep those apartments running, and we got Albert off camera here, and he was helping us too. I mean, you were fixing stuff. And I remember we say, we got a leak in number 5 or something, and Albert would say, oh, well, that's because something's happening on the other side of the building in this room, because it goes downhill to that room. And it's like, really? You know, he knew where everything was. And, you know, we just tried to hold that thing together. But I can remember those days, and Betty's gut was always what we needed to go by. You know, we'd have somebody want to rent a room, and they might have the money and cash in hands, and Betty said, oh, I remember that. And you were always right, Betty.
But you learn to trust your gut, and that's what got us through, you know.
Our guts got us through.
All of our experiences, you know, it soaked into a memory, and here, you know, and at the time of need, we could pull on all of our own personal experiences to be able to decide, and we learned to trust our gut, you know. And if there was a little growling in that gut, you didn't want to go, no, I think I will.
You passed this.
Yeah.
You passed this.
Yeah, Harold talks about when you went in that one apartment and the whole wall was moving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when we decided to tear it down, not tear it down, but complete remodeling, some 4 or 5 years ago. And prior to that, we had started to let different people in and coming off the street. But what we forgot about is what people bring in. Roaches.
Oh, yeah. Plastic bags full of roaches.
Mm-hmm. Oh, roaches. And then we've taken out apartment number 10. And I'm looking at this picture. Okay. I'm saying, pictures don't move. Oh my goodness. And so little Victor, he decided he was gonna touch the picture. And I haven't seen him since. That's been almost 16 years. He left running. And then roaches went.
Oh my, I tell you.
Oh,
those early days were
tough. Those were the days.
They were hard. You know, and we laugh now.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't laugh a lot then.
No, this is out of crying.
Because we really didn't know. It's kind of like we got into this thing and we didn't know what to do next.
Right.
But Betty, you hung in there with us many, many times and gave us advice when we needed it. I remember we had a tax bill due or something. I'm not sure why we had a tax bill, but we had something due. And you said, well, here, I'll loan it to you. And we paid it back.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we did get...
Oh, that was so we could get the Grape Street properties.
I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. No, that was later. No, there was something much earlier than that. I owed $2,000 somewhere, and this organization was in debt. We had no money.
Yeah.
None of us got paid. Mm-hmm. We were all volunteers.
Yeah, we was all volunteers.
And even off camera, we got our cameraman here. His mother was part of it.
Part of it, yeah.
Rhonda was helping us all the time. And I remember you loaned us that money, and we paid it back a little bit here and there. But then when we could get Grape Street, that was another thing. You know, we had just paid off Riverside with that big grant from the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then Betty came up and let us get Grape Street. We wouldn't have gotten the Grape Street apartments if you hadn't gotten that money from Riverside. So it was like, almost like God had everything ordered. And it just all fell in place.
Yeah.
But we had to do the work. And I think sometimes people want it to come so fast. Mm-hmm. It took us years to get where we got.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, nothing's instantaneous. Everything has a pattern of growth.
But
and, you know. And that's what is so successful about a Rogue Retreat. You know, it's like a farmer tending his garden.
Yes.
You know, he goes out and plants all these seeds, and he nurtures them, and he hoes out the weeds that are going to strangle him. You know, and then enjoy the growth and the blooming of the people's faces. And oh my God, it's such a, it sends, tingles down my spine, you know, because to see that individual growth in so many different people, you know, unlike, you know, some of them, you know, leaving the program and like one of them, I think, went to Chad and told him, this is happiest years.
Yeah.
The most blessed years she'd had.
Yeah. We get a lot of those. Over the years, we've had a lot of those. But going back to the foundation and what built this, it's in, it was all in God's hands. It was a dream. Each one of you had a different dream, but the dream was the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's to provide a place for the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And where did all this come together at? It's when we was at our lowest point. God sent us you. I'm telling you, I remember that's the one night of all these I remember. It was raining. I was raining. And the guy was talking about something about 9 to 10% that we only had until December to come up with it. And we'd done all this work and put this thing. And I remember you coming in. You had a bag in your hand and a piece of paper. And I can't think of the guy's name that was doing the selling or whoever he was. I can't think of his name anymore. He knew he had got us backed into a corner and what nothing we could do. We were dead in the water. But you come through. And, and here we are today. We would not, I don't know where we'd be. But God sent us you. I'm going to tell you.
How many people are we helping now?
300 out of 300 plus right now.
Under a roof somewhere.
I see this type of system spreading throughout the country, not necessarily from directly from us.
Right.
But I see you're already getting contacts from other people that's interested in seeing something like that in their own community.
Yes.
And I see it possibly through different sources, churches, communities, whatever.
Yeah, community resources.
Because we've got something that works.
We do.
Yeah.
And, you know, Betty, because your background, Native American a little bit, you know, we had a meeting about a week ago with Klamath Indian Tribe Coalition over there. And they came over, did a tour of what we've got. So excited they want to start something over there. So, you know, your seed is starting to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're right, there's other communities. You know, I just got off a Zoom meeting just before we came in here with Roseburg, with leaders up there, and they're wanting us to help them, you know. So you've got all these communities saying, hey, something's happening down in Medford, you know, we want to do the same thing. But again, like Harold says, Betty, you were there when we needed you, and that's why we wanted
to. We wouldn't know all the place to go.
Absolutely, and you encouraged us and kept us going. And
yes.
Harold and I were working it, but we didn't know what we were doing.
No,
well, you couldn't say no to free labor.
Yeah.
I can remember Betty when we needed to paint something, she wouldn't buy paint. She'd just get a bunch of half buckets out there and pour them all together. Well, I like that. And then we paint the walls. You could never match it again, but you could.
Right.
And, you know, whatever we could do to make things work, we just did it.
Yeah.
And I remember this one of the front upstairs rooms. The floor was so uneven.
Oh yeah.
That, you know, a bowling ball, if you put it on the floor, would probably crash through the other wall, you know. And some helpers and stuff, and I went and cut 2x4s on a pie shape angle.
Yes.
You know, in order to level that out. I was wondering, was that left when you
remodeled? Well, they didn't cover it over and remodel it, and the shim is still there. The shim is there. Yeah, Pastor Randy and them covered that up and covered it up well.
Mm-hmm.
But the shim is still there. Not only did you help us financially, but like Pastor Chet said, you and your son was able to put in physical labor that we didn't have the money to pay for.
That's true.
Well, okay. I was lucky to learn building trades.
Blessed,
you know.
But I did see duct tape in your.
Oh yeah,
you see that duct tape.
That was Louie's special.
Yeah, Louie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's your husband. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, back to the dream, like you said,
back
we all
the
have
dream.
The same dream.
Uh-huh.
And we knew that people could do better if they had a chance.
If they had a chance.
Oh, yes.
And that's really all Rogue Retreat does, is give people a place to be so they can put their lives back together.
Yes. Uh-huh.
We've got an amazing program that Heather built, and Harold works it every day with his people. Mm-hmm. And it works, but they have to have that place.
Yeah, you got to have a safe
haven,
a safe place.
Have to have an address shower and get
that changes everything.
Yeah,
it does.
And you don't have that outside influence of negative, like the one for negativism,
victimology,
victimology, all of that, breathing down your throat or knocking on your door.
Yeah.
I think that is, besides giving an individual a place to live, not only do we give them a place to live, but we give them a safe place to live.
Yes.
That takes a lot of load off of a man's mind.
With a lot of safe people to interact
with. Yeah.
Mentor.
Yeah. And the people that you work with suffer from the same problems you had. And how do we make it, us addicts and alcoholics, ex-addicts, alcoholics, how do we make it? Working with people looking to make their life better.
Yeah.
And acting as models. I have been going through this with a Bible study, is that what was our mission at that time? Yeah, it was to provide a place. But the strong thing about it is that we as individuals exhibited those traits and behavior that was built on righteousness and love. We exhibit that. That ain't something you can go to the store and buy.
No.
You just have to get around us and be in a part of us.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you stay around us, all you get is love and understanding.
Yeah, right.
And some positive.
An unconditional love.
That unconditional, yes.
Yeah. And the judgment was not our authority. You know, we just did not.
And, you know, you loved them, Betty, but you expected them to come through.
Oh, y'all had high expectations.
You know, you told us early on, they get paid on Friday, I'm at their door that night.
Yes.
Remember, Betty knocking on their door, 5 o'clock on Friday. I know you got paid today, you owe your rent.
Yeah.
You know, but it wasn't really being mean.
No,
it's
just part of life.
It is. And you were trying to teach, and Harold, you know this, you're trying to teach people that the weekend's coming, but you got to pay your rent first.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Pay your rent first.
So that when Monday comes, you're not back on the streets.
And we always tried to keep the rent small.
You did.
But you have to pay your bills before you...
Got to
spend,
keep the lights
spend
on.
The rest of your money.
I remember many Fridays being there after dark. They got slick, didn't want to come in. between 4 and 5. They'd try to come in at 8, but we'd be sitting right there at 9 o'clock. Hey! Hey! Yeah, pay your rent. I'm here to collect.
And I loved our Monday meetings out under the deck, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All of the whole community get together.
Yeah, we used to do that, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah, we did.
And that little area there, that was cool.
Yeah.
Boy, those are good memories. And a lot of that stuff that you helped us instill way back then, Betty, we still do.
We still do.
You know, that was kind of the beginning of life skills. Mm-hmm. And, Christopher's behind the camera, he does a life skill every week, you know, on yes. film. And that's where it started back there. Some little lawn chairs sit out there and just chat with people. And, and then we used that one office up front. I can't remember. There was a room up there. We finally added number one, but it was not part of number one then.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it was just a room. So right. I remember. So yeah, we learned a lot of things. It's a miracle where we are today.
Yes, yes, yes. when God has His hands on things.
We had to go through a lot of failures in life to gain any smarts in life.
Yeah.
I can remember when I had that place. Some guy wanted to rent the whole upstairs. What for? Yeah, that's where I proved the power of my gut. Oh, no.
No, not this time.
But you know, you what you said was right, Benny. And whoever watches this in the future, don't be afraid to make mistakes.
Oh, no.
No.
That's our best teachers.
Yeah. And it shouldn't stop us. It just should make us smarter.
Just make us stronger and
stronger.
Stronger and smarter.
Yeah, and nothing wrong with that.
I mean,
that's what teaches that gut how to react. Mm-hmm. If you don't experience failures, you don't experience the successes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you learn
that. And that's with drugs or booze or anything. Mm-hmm. If you don't hit that rock bottom and get sick and tired of being sick and tired, you're not going to try to get better.
Right.
No.
And all it takes is that final decision. And it's easy,
yeah.
You know, but that's allowing yourself to say, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. And it's got to be painful.
Yeah.
It's got to be painful to go back to those days.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think about my days in addiction and I cry. Mm-hmm. What a waste of life. And how pitiful I was as a human being.
Oh, yeah.
And that hurts. Yeah, when you can call your own self pitiful.
Oh, yeah.
And that hurts.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And like you say, once you hit that bottom, when what is it how we say it in the program? When the pain become much greater than the desire to use. You don't have to worry about using after that.
That's good.
When the pain becomes much greater than the desire to use, don't have to worry about using.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what drives you, Harold, to do what you do?
Yeah.
I mean, you were there and it hurt you like crazy.
Yeah. At that time, when I woke up and I found that I wasn't as sharp and smart as I thought it was, addiction tricks you.
Yeah.
And any day and every day, I was going to walk away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm fully in control. Yeah.
I got this.
Sure.
And then when you wake up one day and you done spent the car note, the house note, the food money, and God blessed me at that time, and I come to say, oh, Lord, what am I going to do now? I got my kids hungry. Got the house note due, the car note. Haven't been to work in 4 days, so I'm going to be 4 days short on the next payday. Oh, Lord, what am I going to do now? And the pain becomes, and it took him 7 years, good Lord, let me wander around out there another 7 years the day I said that. And I never knew it was a prayer. And then when we look back on our lives, somewhere we asked and say a prayer. We don't know it's a prayer. And I never knew, oh, Lord, what am I going to do now with some prayer? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was crying out with pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed some help. And I know I couldn't get nothing at the drugstore to help this pain.
Yeah.
And I reached out to the Lord, oh Lord, what am I doing now?
Oh yeah.
So it sounds like your experience going through all that was around drugs and alcohol, right?
Yeah, around drugs.
But Betty's was abuse.
Yeah.
And I had my alcohol addiction for many years. So I totally understand the pain and the guilt.
And the desperation.
What brought me out was the guilt of being an incompetent mother. You know, I felt incompetent.
The pain.
Oh, it was extremely painful.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'd never drink before five, you know, but then I'd be passed out on that couch.
Yeah.
Thank God my kids did not fall in my footsteps.
Yeah.
I've been clean and dry for over 45 years or something like that.
All right.
And I feel complete now.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And like at Riverside, those apartments, we'll go back to that. We've had a lot of young families come through there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, single mom, single dad.
Single dad.
Trying to put it back together.
Yeah.
You know, we've had sometimes a mom or a dad that had lost their children. You know, get one of those little apartments and then put their lives
back. Oh, that's the saddest part.
But they get their lives put back and then they get their kids back.
Right.
And that's incredible.
Yeah. I would like to see that number of people that come through that got their kids back. I don't know if we recorded.
That's an important one.
Yeah.
An important number to have.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're trying to encourage other people to... join in the support.
Right. That would take some work.
That would take some work. What is this? A sitting down round table.
Yeah, we need to do that. But.
And just take a list. That's what I do. I usually go back to the participant list and I'll see my guys. And most of them I got on my phone. But what I see. Coming from you, Betty, I said you was an angel. Betty is an angel.
See my wings?
Yes. Better keep your day job.
Yes. Yes, is that, you go by, and you're in Winco, and somebody will say, hey, Pastor Al. And I don't quite remember. Oh, you know, I was with you there 2 years ago. I was over here and over there. And I look back and I look at him and, how you doing now? And he says, oh yeah, I got another baby and I got all my kids with me and the wife is straight and we clean and sober and we got a new place. What a thought.
Yeah, I followed people for years that way.
Yeah.
A funny, productive, and a high paying job and benefits.
Yeah.
You know? Medical, everything.
That's everything.
You know? And their joy from experiencing what they went through with the rogue retreat.
And what I'm starting to see a little bit now, not a little bit, but for the last year and a half, is that we've taken another look at seniors in my case.
That's my big goal.
sort of found a place, Rogue River Estate. If they own disability and they got SSI, SSDI, they can get them on that list and get them in the Rogue River Estate. They rent drops down $300.
Yeah.
So some are paying $190 a month. Their income is $860.
Mm-hmm.
Those is paying $1,200 is paying $203.
Yeah. Good subsidy.
It's a good place to be, especially if they're not going to try to work and do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set up for people with disabilities, especially seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying, we don't have a senior here, but I saw somewhere where you coming with a senior. No, it was up here that you had a senior. Hopefully we get to that point where we got an SRO. Was that single room living occupants for seniors, and somewhere we could work it out with the governor is that they could put these rents on sliding scales based on people's income.
Mm-hmm.
That way a person that's making $731 a month on the SSI can get a safe place to live.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's where I think in order to continue to increase and housing for the homeless and getting people off the street, we're going to have to figure out how to get those people that's only making $731
that's,
a month.
That's one of my biggest goals in the future. I made it an investment. Yeah. If it ever pays off,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the money's going to Rogue Retreat,
mm-hmm.
because that's just what I want to see it go for. You know, mm-hmm. expand Rogue Retreat and what they're doing now, but
mm-hmm.
include the seniors. Because that's a forgotten population.
It is.
You know, they don't have, Social Security doesn't support
that don't
anybody.
Cut it.
You know, and like you said, you know, they're as low as 700 a month.
Yeah, yeah. It went up to 779.
Mm-hmm.
It's 779 a month now.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't do much good when an average one-bedroom apartment's 950 a month.
Right, right.
In Oregon. So it's a tough one.
You can't even get a room now.
These are people that worked all their life, paid into Social Security, mm-hmm. but can't afford to live in their own hometown.
Yeah.
You know.
So, Betty, you have instilled a vision in this organization.
Yes.
We want to help the seniors. But I also want to help domestic violence victims.
Oh, definitely.
You know, we have a
We
have a wonderful program here, I think, called the Dunn House. You know, but it's not enough. And what happens when they get their time up? They go back to their perpetrator.
Right.
And we've got to have housing. But you, it's your fault. You kicked us, and we're still running down the road.
Good. Let me know if you need me to kick in the butt again.
Keep kicking us.
Yeah. I think after this thing let up here around June and July, we're working towards seniors. In a single room occupation. Mm-hmm. What is it? SRO?
Yeah, I think it's single room occupancy.
Single room occupancy. And kick in with the governor, find out. I don't know how you write a grant for that to get them kick in to do the sliding scale. Remember, they long time ago, they used to do a sliding mm-hmm. scale. If you made $800, your rent was so much. If you made $600, it was eating less.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It needs to be that way. The big problem is just finding the money to pay the rest of it.
Yeah.
And we've even thought about opening houses, Betty. You know, we have recovery houses, Harold.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we wanted one for seniors, but I couldn't figure out how to make a pencil.
No.
Because even if they paid $500 or $600 for a room, which is a lot for a room,
mm-hmm.
we still couldn't cover the cost of the house. And there's no place out there we can get subsidies for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the problem. But you know what? We're not going to give up.
Yeah,
that's an important place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I think we'll do something like they did up in Eugene. They built Emerald Village, which was tiny houses with all the amenities, the electricity and the plumbing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to build them cheap enough, I think for around $50,000 apiece,
mm-hmm.
that they were able then to lease them for $200 or $300 a month, which a senior could afford.
Right,
and that's
ideal.
So as soon as Albert back there will give us 100 acres of land,
we need 100 acres.
We can build this village, and that's where we are right now. You know, land it is a big deal.
Oh, it is.
If we can find land that the city and county and state will allow us to do what we need to do on, away we go. I mean, right now I've got a Rotary Club saying they'll build us 60 tiny houses. They've got the money, they've got the
returns,
they got the resources. Yeah, we need land. So where can we put them? I'm going, Harold's backyard, I don't know.
I had to cover in the pool, though.
Yeah, put them right in the pool, you know.
Yeah.
But that's the big problem. And what I love, Betty, is your dream has caught on to this whole community.
Yes.
People in this community are really willing to do things if we can just figure out how to make it happen.
They love the feeling they get from helping someone else to be able to achieve their best abilities. You know,
they'll donate if we can give if their donation can make a difference.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it does.
Yes, it does.
You know, you were talking earlier about you love to see people progress.
Yeah.
But you may be aware, I think we have about 15 employees here at Rogue Retreat that started in the program.
Well, I know, that's fantastic.
They are absolutely amazing people. And one of the things that I think you helped instill early on, both of you, Harold, you've been the same way. We don't want people to live in poverty.
No.
You know, we want them to break through that line That HUD has that line, you know, you make one more dollar, yeah, you lose everything.
Yeah, we just had a girl do that.
You know?
She's $103 over.
Yeah, but you know, in some ways, good, get over that line. Because even though it's scary and it's, and for a while you're not sure what to do, you begin to live after that line. Mm-hmm. You begin to, you can work full time, you can be the manager, you can own the business. And that's what we want people to do. You know, I've got one right now as our manager at our shelter, and she's just signing papers to buy her first house. Mm-hmm. And I love that because I can remember when she was living in the back of her car.
Yeah.
You know, and now she's owning her own house. Mm-hmm. And they can all do it, right, Harold? I mean, if you just put the right things in place,
and you can provide get there. The right direction.
Yeah.
And help them overcome. I guess the greatest thing that I think that we offer is, that is a blessing to people here is encouraging them and developing self-confidence that they can take the next step. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's all right to not have to get food stamps. It's all right not to have housing substances.
Uh-huh. See, Betty's self-made. Mm-hmm. You know, they gave her tools.
She figured
out something to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And then she buys her own place. Yeah. And you've had multiple places.
I've had multiple places that I just rebuilt and rented out and sold or whatever. But I was lucky, very lucky, because I was raised by an extraordinary family. A strong pioneer spirit to them, you know, and it's like they were all self-made. Mm-hmm. They took the menial jobs, you know, like digging graves, digging cesspools, pumping cesspools,
nobody else wanted that.
Making bricks, mm-hmm. but they all ended up owning the company.
And maybe that's great advice, because sometimes, you know, we deal with people that think they ought to start at the top. You can't get to the top if you don't start at the bottom.
I had a grandson like that, you know. I want a profession. I want that high paid job now.
And next time we get together, I have to tell y'all a God-given story about that. Okay,
well, there might not be a next time, so you better tell it now.
Oh, yeah. When I was at the dormitory, and I come out of this cancer thing, and I was getting ready to leave the dorm. Well, in my mind, well, I was just here 7 years ago, a general manager of a grocery warehouse.
Yeah.
You know, I had 126 truckers, 140 employees on the grocery side and truckers. Mm-hmm. I had all five departments, meat, vegetables, groceries, commodities, and I was running that. So when I was getting ready to graduate, they sent you out looking for a job.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the perfect job that I had just done. And I worked for the state in Seattle, Washington State, at the employment specialist, as an employment specialist. And I had did that for 5 years. They had one, that job. And that job was in five of the major cities here. One here, one in Grants Pass. And what is it, three cities up there? Salem, Portland, and what's the other little?
Eugene, maybe?
No, it's another one outside of Eugene. Another little
Roseburg
city. No, it's way up north, pretty close to Portland.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so I made all the cutoffs, and so you had to go do these interviews. So I interviewed for the one in Grants Pass twice, but unfortunately I wind up as the number two guy with 20 years experience. So, but the first guy happened, I thought. And Portland, I wound up number three, and on down. So now I'm frustrated, and I'm put in for job after job in Seattle, not Seattle, but here in Medford. I didn't have in-house experience with kids. Okay. I don't know what an employment specialist have to do with in-house. But anyway, it was, and so I got all frustrated, and finally I had to come out of the dorm, and they had me right over there on West Main at the veterans' house. And a job opened up out at Harry and David as a tulip planter.
I can do the tulips.
I say I left Texas on the run out of that cotton field. I didn't want to plant nothing. But anyway,
I remember you working out there.
Yeah, and I took that job, and I worked that job, and they worked me.
Yeah.
But I noticed about 3 weeks there, I was there, and Kenny come by, and he said, "Man, I'm still looking for a job." He said, "I saw one over here at Platinum International," and I said, "Okay, I'll drop you off." And so I got over there at Platinum International, and the first job I took was a housekeeper at Shiloh Inn.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was the first job I took coming out of that. I hadn't done this since I was 16 years old. Me and my mom used to do housekeeping. And I'm back with a college degree. Just full circle. So I worked there 2 weeks, and then Harry and David. So I'm there at Harry and David for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. And Kenny come by, and I drop him off at the job. And saw this guy look out the window. And he looked down. He said, "Hey, come in." And so Kenny called me up. Go up there as a friend of mine, told me, and I slept in the same cubicle at the dorm. He's the general manager of Platinum
International. Oh, boy.
Yeah. He said, "Well, Harold, look, why don't you come on and work for me?" I said, "Well, I got about 3 more weeks out of here." He said, "Once you finish that up, come on and work for me." So I went to work for him after that. And then I come down to cancer thing. But I took that one job as a housekeeper. And every job in the world opened up for me after that.
You have to start. That's,
I'm just saying is that I become humble enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how everything opened up to me. And here I sit
no
today.
Spot, no job's too small if you're desperate.
As long as you're getting paid. That, you know, I had to come to that agreement with myself.
Yeah. Just, and you know, we say it here all the time, Robert, do the next right thing.
Do the next right
thing. And you know, if I'm saying, well, I'm too good for that, that's not the next right thing.
Yeah.
And you know, I had to volunteer for this place. We all volunteered for years without ever getting a penny.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we just have to remind people, if you do the right thing, doors open.
Doors open for you.
You know, you'll get to
work. You'll get blessed.
Yeah.
It wasn't the money with me, it was the job title.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I have the right job.
But I'm a professional.
So I could make you some business cards, Harold. What do you want? What do you want me to say on it?
But I just how God blessed me all those times as he taught my lesson. As I learned the lessons, if it took me long to learn the lesson, guess what? I got plenty of knots on my head.
Yeah.
When I learned the lesson, he moved me on.
Yeah.
Hey, if I'm stuck in a spot too long, I stop and ask, "What am I doing wrong, Lord? What am I doing wrong?"
So we're kind of bumping up at the end of this hour.
Yeah.
But Betty, I think about, you know, you've got a lot of wisdom, and people are watching this. And you know, what would you say to people to inspire them to believe in their dreams and do what they need to do? I mean,
well, I was lucky enough to be taught. An early age, there's nothing I can't do if I don't try. You know, there's no such thing as can't. You know, you got to try, fail, and try, and fail until you succeed.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, I don't have any great words of wisdom, but you don't succeed until you try.
Well, you know, I think back, and I remember you telling me that you were down there in Oakland, you had a, what was it, an 8x8 little spot you were living in.
Oh, yeah,
or
right.
Whatever it was. And you
little said, closet.
Little closet, yeah. But you, I remember you saying that you had this dream. You had that spot, you know, you mentioned it earlier, that Riverside. Your dream was, I'm going to go back, and I'm going to turn that into something to help people.
Yeah.
And you did what you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
And you had no idea that your dream was going to then intersect with our dream. And here we got 300 people every night under a roof. And we're
under a roof.
And we're going to have more soon. Yeah. But, so I guess that back thing, if you don't try it, you never get there.
Right. Yeah. If you don't put that first foot forward, you know, the second, the other one's not going to fall.
Yes.
And Harold, you and I would go back to the Bible where Jesus always says, ask and
you shall receive.
But if you don't ask. Mm-hmm.
Knock and it will be open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Seek and you shall find. If you're going to write in a Bible story about our lives in the last 22 years here, it parallels Jesus' walk through the four Gospels.
Yeah.
If you can look in John, Mark, Luke, in one of those Gospels, you know, in the success of Rogue Retreat, and the success in my life, it parallels the Bible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The great miracle and the having the faith and staying the course, I think that's the tough thing, is having faith that God gonna make this come out right. Yeah, I'm in a lot of pain today. But if I hold on, God will make this right.
I'm in debt.
I'm in debt. I'm my head. I don't know how I'll pay all this come next month.
And I ran out of duct tape, but I'm gonna get through it.
You can always get another roll of duct tape.
Yeah, yeah.
Might have to sell your plasma to get it. Yeah.
But I get this duct tape, I'm gonna duct this. Yeah, but I'm just saying,
yeah.
We all had a lot of faith.
Yeah, and I think
a lot of trust in the Lord.
Yeah, I think the main thing is that was your higher power, and the higher power is open to anyone, no matter what sort of spirituality they may have. Yes. You know, whether they're Buddha or I was lucky to be heavily involved in a natural Indian, the Indian community. And I had my biggest awakening and spiritual feelings in the sweat lodge and the Indian ceremonies and stuff like that. You know, other people have something else that they go to, you know, but that's, you know, and sometimes they need to just lean on a mentor to help them get through till they acquire their own.
Yes.
Their own way to go. But it's open for anyone.
Hey, this is Chris Janish, co-producer of the Finding Hope podcast. We hope you enjoy this episode. New episodes out every Wednesday. We'd love if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to connect with us, find Rogue Retreat on Facebook at facebook.com/Rogue Retreat.